This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's have an uncomfortable conversation, or it might be a comfortable conversation, I guess, depending on how you interpret it. But let's talk about where we're at right now as a movement on the right, what we're looking at in the midterms and why. Let's just break this down. So something that's been a big bit of news that's been making the rounds is the retirement, the resignation, if you will, of Marjorie Taylor Greene, congresswoman from Georgia. She's resigning in January, walking away. All right, that's one story. Not going to focus on that specifically, but there are reports out there, Punchbowl News, saying there will be more resignations coming soon. I will tell you on a personal level, I had a text exchange with a congressman last week, and it started out with him texting me four words. I hate it here. What do you say? Sounded very much like a man who wanted to walk away, wanted to retire. And this guy's one of the good ones, wanted to walk away, wanted to retire. Okay? We only have a slim majority. After Marjorie Taylor Greene walks away, it's going to be about 3 seats. If we get too many resignations, the Democrats may have the House of Representatives before the midterms. All right. So this is bad, and we'll come back to the bad in a moment. But let's pause for a moment. Right now, I'm getting this impression, and I'm going through this as well, that we're pretty down right now on the right. We're down on things. We're down on the way things are going, on what's been done, what hasn't been done. We're going to lose the midterms. We're going to get crushed. We're pretty down on things. And as we're about to discuss, we may get crushed in the midterms, but do keep this in mind in politics. I've been in politics for 20 years. I mean, interested in politics in 20 years. I was just a fan for most of my time, but I pay attention the same way you pay attention. In politics, it matters, so we care a lot. That's why you're into it, right? That's why you're sitting here watching me on I'm Right. That's why I consume the news the same way you do. The stuff matters. It's important for the direction of our country, for the country we're going to leave behind. It's important. And because it's important, we get emotional about it. And because we get emotional about it, we tend to go through highs that are too high and lows that are too low. Because we care, right? We care. You ever been in a relationship, especially early on? Boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, that he doesn't call. It's the end of the world. You had one good date. We're going to get married and be married for 60 years. This is how we are. This is how I am when it comes to politics. When Donald Trump wins an election and we have the House and we have the Senate and we got some good political appointees coming in, we say to ourselves, my goodness, we are saved. We're going to be great forever. Democrats are never coming back to power. Life is good. We've won. Final victory. And then we have a rough couple months, and I fully admit it's been a rough couple months. We have a rough couple months. Oh, it's over. We're done. The country's over. I'm moving to Portugal. Not that anyone would ever do such a thing. Just remember, like we've talked about before, be careful with your highs and be careful with your lows in politics. Now let's talk about the low we are currently in. It's rough. It's been rough. And the House GOP has not helped itself. And Trump, we'll get to Trump in a few, but the House GOP has not helped itself. Times have changed. And there is always a lag in Washington, D.C., understanding how you feel. Because they're in a bubble, there's always a signal lag where you, all your friends, you feel this way, you feel strongly about something, but the message hasn't gotten through to them. And this is something the Republican Party had better get on top of. The American people, specifically the American right, we'll set aside the communists, the American right, they want things done. Tangible things done. It's not just prices we want down. We want corrupt government people arrested. We want this done. We want that done. Not more speeches. Whenever we get some committee hearing where some GOP congressman, some senator puts a great soundbite out there, really gets them. You know what I don't hardly get anymore? I don't hardly get emails saying, yeah, did you see Senator What's-His-Face? Kill him. What I get is, why are we getting another hearing? Why aren't we doing something? Do something. Are you going to do anything? That's what you feel like. That's what I feel like. But there's a signal lag, you see. Right now, the right is down. We want tangible things done. We want government people thrown into prison. We want deportations. We want prices down. We want things done. The House GOP did this.
Just showing this from the Hill right now. This is a measure to condemn socialism. The vote is still being tabulated. But of note, the four leading Democrats in the House voted with Republicans to condemn socialism.
What? With everything going on, our palpable anger, our demands that somebody do something tangible, the House GOP passes a resolution to condemn socialism? You want to talk about signal lag. Maybe they thought they were going to get a pat on the back, some applause for that. I've never seen the right so angry. We're not impressed. I'm not impressed. It's been a down couple months, and that GOP doesn't seem to figure out how to fix itself. So let me explain why things are down right now for the GOP, and let me explain how it has to be turned around. Things are down for really two huge reasons. The huge reasons are this. First, the Epstein stuff was messaged really poorly. It's not that the average everyday voter cares about the Epstein stuff. I'm not talking about the normies. I'll get to them in a moment. We'll set the normies stuff aside. The Trump coalition is large. It's very diverse. All kinds of different interests, border hawks and make America healthy again hawks and all kinds of stuff. There are many different parts of the coalition. But almost all of the parts want wealthy, powerful pedophiles exposed, right? And maybe that's in the files. Maybe it's not. We don't know. I don't know that it's been kept from us, but it looked really bad when Trump decided to come out and say, shut up and stop talking about it. That was terrible messaging. Terrible. The Epstein stuff, from the Pam Bondi binders that didn't have anything new in them to Trump yelling at everyone to shut up about it, looked bad. It deflated the right. It deflated the base. It looked bad. That hurt. Now, with normies. Normies don't focus on Epstein. Normies are out there today. Maybe you were doing this. I'll tell you what, I did this before I came in. Maybe you were out there buying Thanksgiving supplies today. Normies can't afford food. They can't afford the power bill. I just had to replace an air conditioning in my home a little while ago. It was $9,000 to replace an air conditioning. People can't afford to live. If you're wondering why Democrats currently have the largest lead they've had on the generic ballot since 2017, it's not actually because of Epstein stuff. It's because people can't afford things now. And Trump was elected into the White House because life had become unaffordable. Now, if you're saying it's unfair to expect him to fix that in a year, I totally agree. Totally agree. I'm not laying that at his feet. But people are not going to be satisfied at their kitchen table because of resolutions against socialism. Prices have to come back down. Me, you, we remember what it was like 4 or 5 years ago when prices weren't like this, when we could afford more things. We remember. That's just like yesterday. We remember. So they're still up. We're still not happy. That's why the White House, to their credit, is starting to message things like this.
I think 2026, thanks to President Trump's signature plans, is going to be a great year for working Americans, for the markets.
It's going to be an absolute blockbuster year ahead. And one of the signals you just mentioned, the jobs report, that was double the expectation, the blowout jobs report. We've got GDP now for the last two quarters, almost 4% on average, maybe even a little bit above. And we're going to have a little bit of a hiccup in the fourth quarter because of the silly shutdown. But then things are really lifting.
Okay. Things better be looking up. Right now, the American people don't feel that. Telling them help is on the way, jobs are coming, that works, but they better get here, because that's really going to go to how we go with the midterms. If people still feel down about jobs, about the economy, about it, about inflation a year from now, next November, we're going to get our teeth kicked in. Now back to the right. Remember when Pam Bondi came out, the James Comey stuff? Remember when she said this?
People have to be held accountable. No one, Sean, is above the law. No one is above the law. And you will be held accountable. And, you know, a very liberal grand jury in one of the most liberal jurisdictions in the country just indicted James Comey. Now, we know, of course, we have to go to trial. We'll have a great trial team. And everyone, of course, is innocent until proven guilty. However, we are going to trial in this case, and this is just the beginning.
Yeah, judge just dismissed it. Judge, one of these commie judges, just dismissed the James Comey stuff, the Letitia James stuff. And I know Pam Bondi, she went to the cameras after this, what she said.
We'll be taking all available legal action, including an immediate appeal, to hold Letitia James and James Comey accountable for their unlawful conduct.
What is your reaction to his statement?
I'm going to keep going on this. I'm not worried about someone who has been charged with a very serious crime. His alleged actions were a betrayal of public trust.
Right. Doesn't exactly fill you up with confidence that those two criminals are going to burn. So let's just have it out. A significant portion of the Trump coalition voted for Trump in part, not majorly, but in part, because we wanted to see powerful people finally go down for their crimes. Now, maybe we can make all the excuses in the world. This was a Clinton judge. It was this jurisdiction. But all that stuff may be totally justified. And we're going to get into the details of it with Bill Jacobson in a moment. But just like the vote to condemn socialism, we don't want more press conferences. We don't need more Fox News hits. I mean, those are fine, but it has to be followed up with tangible things. I know there's a DC to us signal lag, so everyone in DC watching right now, please hear my words. We need tangible things now. The days of emails, of these stupid text messages you send us all, I need help putting James Comey away, send $15. We're tired of it. And you're going to deflate the base so badly that we're going to sit at home in November. I mean, I know you won't, I won't, but lots of it will. We have got to get this turned around. It's a down period of time, not saying it's going to last forever, but we do have to turn it around. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I love chips. I'm a chip freak. I can't help it. I wish when I snacked that I was seeking out anything else, but I just have these blinders on and I go right for chips. Now, that's generally bad because most chips are terrible for you. They just are. I heard about Massa chips from my buddy Mike quite a while ago. He was telling me, you're gonna love them, but he's one of these health freaks. So I thought the same thing you're thinking right now. Oh, they're gonna be gross. Think about 3 ingredients, how good could it be? Best chips I've ever had in my life. My young, junk food loving son prefers them over any other chip. When we get a box to the house, if I'm not home, he will take it to his room and hide it from me. That's how delicious these friggin' things are. Go try a few bags of Massa chips. They're your new chip and you can eat them guilt-free. MassaChips.com/JesseTV.
We will find out who you are and we will come after you. Domestic terrorists, foreign terrorists, you better look out because we're coming after you.
And if you've committed fraud, we're coming after you.
You better watch out because we're coming after you. Let me be very clear. If you don't comply with federal law, you're going to be next.
Let this be a warning. You can run, but you cannot hide. Justice is coming.
Big talk that doesn't get delivered on. Very similar to the Michigan Wolverines. Joining me now, Steve Dace, host of the Steve Dace Show. Steve, I mean, I don't know which disappointment we want to talk about first, Michigan or Pam. It's really, the floor is yours, but.
Listen, brother, I know it's been about 2,194 days since you all have beaten us, but who's counting? Apparently I am. Pam has been she's just been a colossal disappointment. And if you knew Pam Bondi's political arc before this appointment, you would not be surprised. She's largely spent much of her time in the Republican Party's more establishment side, more Romney side of things. And I think it just kind of figured out, there's a lot of Republicans in the last few years, Jesse, that have cynically figured out that if they genuflect to the personality of Trump on a few things, they can advance their careers beyond what their worldview stated they deserve. Sort of a reverse Peter principle, if you will. You rise to the level of your own slurpage. She's indicative of that. Now, my hope is, you know, when they brought Andrew Bailey in underneath her a few months ago, that they were setting him up to take her place. Andrew Bailey's the former attorney general at Missouri, did a great job there. He's the one that got Anthony Fauci under oath in that incredible deposition. I'd urge every member of your audience to go back and read from a couple of years ago. He has to be an upgrade just by the process of osmosis. I mean, he doesn't have to even be good at this. You know, but the current meme going around of Pam Bondi, and it says, I seriously thought about arresting somebody recently, is a pretty good summation of what the entire year of this DOJ, from her to Cash's FBI, really just, to me, the biggest disappointment of this year. And I don't even think there's a close second.
Steve, I've heard the same rumors, Brianna Morello and others reporting that Andrew Bailey may be bouncing her out, which would be just fine from me. Honestly, while I'm really down on her and the DOJ in general, that at least should tell us that the Trump administration is sensing that we need tangibles, right? We don't need another press conference. We don't need another resolution condemning socialism. The right has had just about enough of that. Someone better be in an orange jumpsuit.
I don't disagree. I mean, and I think, you know, there's a tension here, brother, in that, you know, clearly from the way that Trump laid down markers right after the election. I mean, go back to election night. If anybody could have taken, you know, an obnoxious victory lap, they literally tried to murder the guy after they tried to put him in prison, and he beat him anyway. And instead, on election night, he really did not make it about himself at all. He talked about RFK Jr. and the people he wanted to appoint and what he wanted to do for the country. In sharp contrast to his first term, you remember the first big fight we had in his first term was over whether more people came to his inaugural than Barack Obama's. And then he came right out with a serious policy agenda and acting on it executively, again, in sharp contrast to the first term. I think clearly he wanted to demonstrate, listen, I learned some lessons. I'm ready to govern. I'm ready to lead. And I think particularly the first 6 months of this first year were really, really strong because of that prep. And what was the other big criticism of the first term? The revolving door of people in and out. Remember Anthony Scaramucci and Omarosa when they were a thing for 10 minutes, right? And so I think that, you know, especially for a high profile position like AG, you don't want to make it look like, you know, I'm throwing that person out right away the first time they disappoint me. And then that narrative again that, you know, we're kind of unsettled and don't know what they're doing. But I got to be honest with you, Jesse. I just think Cash Patel's lying to me every time he talks, either commission or omission, like every single time. Okay. His body language, like on every statement, is terrible. Pam Bondi's inaction has been terrible. And I think now those two people have gotten almost an entire calendar year. I can't believe there's anybody who thinks that they have not been disappointments. I think I would just move on.
Okay, Steve, now obviously I'm feeling what you're saying. Everyone watching is feeling what you're saying. Let me try to attempt this. Are we asking too much? Meaning Pam Bondi, who I'm not a fan of, what's she supposed to do about the fact that a communist judge was installed in Tustin? You know, that all these systemic, what a great word, systemic things have been put into place to make stopping the system, changing the system, maybe not impossible, but slow and very, very difficult. And maybe after a year, are we getting too impatient too fast?
I think that's on a case-by-case basis, because you're right. There is a systemic problem here. But to me, this woman's credibility was hit the 2-minute warning in February when she took a lot of our brightest influencers and basically provoked them to tarnish their own credibility with the stupid binders of the Epstein files. And the whole thing's been just downhill from there. Going, how many times did she go on Fox News in the nights prior to that event back in February to say, they're on my desk right now, I'm examining them right now. The target, it's a target-rich environment of people that could be arrested, and maybe arrested so that you don't have to go through a Trump or a Democrat-appointed judge or a D.C. court. How about the FBI is under her purview as well. You have these heroic whistleblowers like my friend Stephen Friend that we were told on August 27th we're all getting reinstated, and now there's been no further action or announcement on that whatsoever. I mean, there's just been too much dishonesty and too much incompetence that I think that, you know, you've reached a point of diminishing returns here. And if anything, maybe you've set a successor up to be successful in light of the systemic challenges we face with the swamp, like you just said, because the current rate of accomplishment is so low. I think you've just got to cut and run. I think if she were a stock, man, you got to pump and dump. You got to move on. I mean, this just isn't going to work. You can't go into another calendar year with this.
Okay. Steve, everyone, right? The midterms are starting to be on people's minds right now because we're a year away. And the general feeling is, I mean, Trump has basically said it himself, that we are going to get our teeth kicked in the midterms. Generic ballot looks bad. Prices are still too high. You know, all the stuff that's true. Can we change that? Can we reverse it? Can it be done? Is it possible?
It is. Now, there are only certain limiting. So there's only certain factors we control here. All right. And you know, you can lose the generic ballot 4 or 5 points and still get close to a stalemate, provided you hold on to the balkanized parts of the country that are in your favor. And this goes back to the conversation we just had. You know, for our people, if we're not going to be able to deliver for them massive economic results, and you think of, you know, Reagan faced a similar malaise when he came in 80, and he got massacred in the 1982 midterms, and then turned around, the economy finally began to feel his changes, his paradigm shifts, and he had a historic landslide in 84. We can't afford that now, because if we get massacred next year, much of the Trump presidency is over. Trump will be in facing impeachment every day. The cabinet appointments we love the most, Hegseth, RFK Jr., all those people, they're all facing impeachment inquiries every single day. Much of the domestic agenda, whatever you think should have, is too slow, it grinds to a complete halt if we lose. So we have to control what we can control. What we need is our base max lit. We need them max unified. We need them to max turnout, because you're right. We really can't ultimately determine everything about the economy that will change swing and normie voters. Where we get massacred is when we're +5 on the generic ballot, and then you see what happened to Winsome Sears. What happened to Winsome Sears, third largest county in Virginia, Loudoun County, Virginia, Jesse, she only got 62% of the people in that county that voted for Trump in 2020. Her Democrat opponent got 84%. That was the whole election right there. We have to turn out our base. If we cannot deliver mass economic records, then the other stuff our base cares about the most, transparency, accountability, election reform, that's the stuff we have to deliver on, so that our base, that, because what happens is our base looks at that and says, we're already going to lose anyway, so screw these guys. They didn't get me what we want. I'm staying home, and Trump's not on the ballot anyway. And that's how the entire nation begins to look like the Winsome Sears race. That cannot happen. We have to control what we can control. What we can control is delivering on some of these things I just mentioned: transparency, accountability, election reform, delivering on those things for our people. And then ultimately, you do whatever you can with the economic messaging.
If Trump is not on the ballot, which he's not going to be on the ballot, not in 28, not in 26, if Trump's not on the ballot, do we have what it takes to motivate our base, or is our base just used to voting for Trump, and that is what it is now?
That's why, again, these issues are so important. These issues are like proxies for Trump. These are not issues the Republican Party cared about ever prior to the ascendancy of Trump. So the issues of accountability, all right, transparency, these are issues, election reform, these issues are unique to Trump as a brand. They're the closest we get to getting Trump on the ballot, is to be strong on these issues. And we can't just say, well, if you elect us again, we'll get them done, when you had the votes to get it done this time. We need a record of accomplishment on those issues so that Trump can then go out all over the country next year and sell our people on, hey, we delivered on those fronts. He is a symbol of disruption. Those issues are manifestations of the disruption he's a symbol of. And so it's the closest we get Because if we don't deliver on those, you end up with the other factor, which is not Trump not on the ballot, but the other side is still driven by him to show up in mass. And then our side is depressed in result. And that's how you end up with a massacre. So we have to deliver on those three issues because they're proxy issues for Trump and his political brand.
Steve, thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. I love hot chocolate. I mean, what red-blooded American doesn't love hot chocolate? But I love it a lot. And my hot chocolate in my house is pretty special. It's Dream Powder from Beam. You know that's what it is, right? It's hot chocolate. Now, yes, it's going to give you the greatest night's sleep of your life with natural things. No drugs. No drugs. It's got reishi and magnesium and melatonin and all these things in it, but it's just a delicious cup of hot chocolate. Mine is cinnamon chocolate. I sip on it half hour before bed, sitting there, reading a book, watching something on TV, and then you just kind of get a little sleepy. And you go drift off to sleep and have the best night's sleep of your life. But the waking is the more important part. Because it's drug-free, you don't wake up like a zombie. You wake up refreshed. Go find out what I mean. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly.
March of 24, I wrote something for Fox Digital, and everyone go back and pull it up, March 12th, and it was called How the Three I's Are the Eviscerating Working Americans. So what were the three I's? Immigration, interest rates, and inflation. Borders closed, promise made, promise kept. 10-year was 508, I think it's at 4 now. And mortgage rates key off of that. I think short-term interest rates could come down more, so interest rates down. And now we're at inflation. And inflation is coming down. I am very confident over the coming 12 months, we are going to see the third eye bite the dust, and inflation's going to come down.
Okay. Well, that's music to my friggin' ears. Let's see what John has to say about it. Joining me now, John Carney, economics editor at Breitbart News. All right, John, inflation coming down. Every single American watching right now just sat up in their chair and said, really? Is it gonna?
It is coming down. Actually, some good news. The American Farm Bureau said the price of a Thanksgiving meal is down about 5% from last year. So this is, you know, they put together all the ingredients, cranberry sauce, baked potato, mashed potatoes, turkey, of course, and they do this calculation, and it's come down. Inflation is down a lot from where it was under Joe Biden, and it's going to keep coming down by all indications through, you know, through next year. It's going to take a while before we get to 2%, which is the Fed's official target. But we're moving in that direction, so good news. And I think Besson's right on that. I think we will see within the next 6 months material progress on inflation.
All right, John, which of course begs the question. So if we get inflation down to 2%, that does not return me, a normal American, to what I was paying before we decided to shut down the country for a bad chest cold. Is that over? Is that country simply gone because we shut it down? You can level with me. Is it over? Is that gone?
No, I don't think it is. I think the key, we're not going to bring prices to where they should be. That inflation, unfortunately, is baked in the cake where we can't get rid of it. But what we can do is grow wages. So that, and that's the other half of what I'll call like the Besson Trump plan, is to grow wages faster than the rate of inflation so that wages catch up, so that things no longer feel as expensive as they are now. A huge part of the problem is prices went up and our wages went up much more slowly. So things really did become unaffordable, and they still are in many cases far less affordable than they were before the pandemic. But if we can grow wages fast enough, we will catch up. It'll still feel bad. Guys like you and I will still look at the price of a hamburger and be like, I can't believe that's what they're going to charge me for a hamburger. But wages will catch up and people will start to feel a little better about it because their money will go further.
Well, that's music to my ears. Break down for me, if you don't mind, John, why? Why are wages going to go up? What's happening right now that's going to put more money in my pocket?
Sure, a couple things. One, we're having an investment boom in America. We just got durable goods orders in this week. I mean, it's backdated to September because the Democrats shut down the government. But they showed a huge leap in business investment for the second month in a row. It grew 0.9% in August and 0.9% in September. That kind of investment in business actually will create a lot of demand for labor. The other half of it is we've closed the border. That's one of the things Bessent was talking about in his three I's. That puts upward pressure on American wages. And what we're seeing is a lot more jobs are being filled by Americans rather than foreigners now. That will help bring wages up as well. And I think we're going to start to see the fruits of the deregulation and the tariffs, frankly, moving production back on shore. That will also put upward pressure on wages. So I think we're going to catch up faster than, you know, most economists think. They think, well, it'll take years and years. But one of the things I've learned in watching the Trump administration over the years is they always underestimate how quickly the economy can recover when you have good governance.
John, zooming out from us, because sadly we are affected by the rest of the world, what's the global economic situation now? Because it wasn't just the United States of America that's had some rocky times in the past few years. That's been fairly universal. Are other places getting their feet under them? Are we starting to get back to normal or not?
No. So there's a lot of economic problems still going on around the world. China has a really precarious economic situation. They are trying to sort of, their economy was, for the last few years, was really based on a property bubble where, you know, something close to what we went through in the United States where you had a real estate bubble. It's not based on mortgages as much. There's a lot of mortgages, but it's a property bubble. They were trying to replace that growth with export growth. The problem is they've run into Donald Trump. And the U.S. is no longer open to Chinese dumping of exports. So that's a big problem for China. Europe has a problem as well. They're having to rebalance their economy. Their economy really did depend very much on an uneven playing field between the U.S. and Europe. So Europe is trying to rebalance. They're going to grow slow. It will be a drag on the U.S. We want our allies to be rich and wealthy and to do well, but it's going to take some time. That means their appetite for U.S. products will be lower, which will slow our growth a bit. But what we're going to see over the next couple of years is the U.S. is probably going to grow at a much healthier rate than Europe, and we might, China will. Who knows how fast China really grows? The numbers are all, I don't trust a bit of them, but China's going to really struggle because they can't switch from real estate to export like they had planned because we put tariffs on them.
Are we going to have a new Fed chair? There are all these rumors, but you're the one who always knows this stuff. Are we going to have a new Fed chair? If so, why? And what's the new guy going to do?
So yes, we will have a new Fed chair no matter what. Jerome Powell's term ends in April. Donald Trump is very close to naming someone. Alex Marlowe and I interviewed Scott Bessent. He made it clear that they are getting very close to, they've been interviewing candidates. It's most likely either going to be Kevin Hassett, who is Donald Trump's chief economic advisor in the White House, the national economics director right now, Kevin Warsh, who used to be on the Fed, and then Christopher Waller, who is currently a Fed governor, but he dissented once when the Fed didn't cut. He's probably going to vote for another rate cut in the December meeting. He's also a strong candidate. I think he actually has a stronger chance than people are giving him odds for. Those are probably the three leading candidates. Of course, look, it's Donald Trump. He, you know, often plays his cards pretty close to his vest on these things. Nobody really knows until he makes the decision who it's going to be. So I don't think even, you know, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent knows who it will be right now. We'll have to wait to see what Donald Trump says. He probably wants to say something, though, before Christmas is what I'm hearing.
Well, how about that? We'll take that. John, you have a happy Thanksgiving, my friend. I appreciate you. We have a crisis in the United States of America, and I'm not talking about inflation, although that's bad, illegal immigration, or any of the other things we talk about all the time. We have a crisis that's inside us, testosterone. This is something we must have as a country. Without it, you're not going to make it. We've lost half of our testosterone in 50 years because of all the estrogen in the waters. We're showering it. It's a disaster. It's a national crisis. Chalk is out there to turn it around, to give you energy again, to have you feeling good, have your mind working well all day long. That's what Chalk can do with natural herbal supplements, not drugs, not needles. I take a male vitality stack from Chalk every single day. Take it with breakfast. Do the same, and in 90 days, you're going to send me an email thanking me. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV and get a subscription today.
Somalis are not terrorizing this nation. We are helping it thrive. Somalis have always seen themselves as a fabric of this nation. So not only are we not going anywhere, we are not going to allow anybody to make us feel less Minnesotan or less American.
Well, things are going well up there. Joining me now, Liz Collins, senior reporter, Alpha News. Liz, I don't even know where to begin on the Somali-based scandals that are going on in your backyard, so maybe I should actually hand it to the reporter. What is happening up there?
Yeah, so much has made national news now, but federal prosecutors, Jesse, have estimated now that there has been multi-billions of dollars in fraud in Minnesota. Just to catch your audience up to speed, we've had 78 defendants now been sentenced in just the Feeding Our Future fraud scheme alone. This was the largest COVID fraud scheme in the country, overwhelmingly perpetuated in the Somali community. And those co-defendants stole more than $47 million in funds, claiming to serve 18 million meals to kids at more than 30 food distribution sites across Minnesota. The math never added up. We know a lot of that money went overseas. It'll never be recovered. You have fraud at autism centers, adult daycares, medical transportation companies. An entire program was recently shut down by the state of Minnesota. It was supposed to help people find housing. It had to be shut down after it was riddled with fraud. And over at Alpha News, we've checked out many of the tips that we've received, people alleging these fake businesses, phantom billing. I've seen for myself the empty parking lots, empty businesses. And then you can just check a quick online search to state records. We'll show just how many millions of dollars these what look to be fake businesses are receiving. I can tell you the taxpayers are very frustrated. We've seen this for ourselves. In fact, one business that we recently profiled actually set up a surveillance camera themselves to just say, here, there's never any cars coming and going. This autism center is getting $2 million from taxpayers. We've had people calling on Governor Tim Walz to resign in the wake of all of this. He is currently still running for his third term, Jesse, here in Minnesota.
Okay, before we get to Tim Walz, Liz, I'm sorry, I know it's probably off the subject. I need to rewind for a second. Adult daycares? What's an adult daycare?
You know, it's funny, that's what federal prosecutors have asked again and again. They've never even heard of this type of business, but these have exploded in Minnesota. We've checked some out many times. Often there's nobody there, or I've actually gone into some. There's been people, just a few people sitting on a couch, and, you know, yet online they'll be advertising all these great activities that they take these older adults to. That doesn't seem to be happening into the stories that we've looked at, but certainly a lot of questions. It seems that there should be some safeguards put up on the front end rather than, you know, looking for this money after it's long gone.
Adult daycares. Gosh, I'm really old. Okay, so back to Tim Walz. Do you get the impression, because you're the one who digs into this stuff, that Minnesota and the political apparatus there look the other way for all this endless Somali fraud, or it worse, helped in it? What's your impression on how the government is involved in this?
You know, it's a good question. Republican legislators have recently been more questioning that, I think, publicly. You know, why have you allowed this for so long? Especially now with this explosion of all of these frauds, it seems almost at the same time. And again, we're talking about billions of dollars that have been built from taxpayers at this point. We have the Attorney General of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, who has been very quiet when it comes to fraud in Minnesota. Instead, it's been federal prosecutors taking these cases on. And then, you know, this, I think, made national news just recently with President Trump announcing he's going to terminate a temporary protected status, that TPS for Somali immigrants specifically. That's a little bit more than 400 people. It's estimated in Minnesota. We are the home to the largest Somali population in the country, anywhere between 80 and 100,000. But we have documented this before, that the money in many cases has gone overseas. Kenya, Somalia. My sources have said that many have figured out how to do this. They go ahead and they'll serve a 5 to 10 year prison term for this fraud. And we know that some of this real estate has been, you know, bought in other parts of the world, and they'll serve their time. And, you know, it's sort of set up for them upon their release. So there's been calls to, you know, hey, do we need tougher sentences when it comes to this fraud? It's so pervasive.
Good grief. All right, Liz, let's shift gears here. Derek Chauvin might be, this is my opinion, not yours, the most legally crapped on human being in the United States of America in the last decade. And now I know his lawyers are saying, hey, can we get this guy out of jail? What's happening with all this?
Yeah, Jesse, also something that has taken place on Governor Tim Walz's watch. We talk about fraud, but fraud to me also involves lies, certainly a lot of them told in this case. But we have the latest developments with Derek Chauvin's case, this new court filing in support of a post-conviction relief for Derek Chauvin. It's a 71-page petition filed in Hennepin County Court last week, now alleging prosecutorial misconduct. It's basically Chauvin's last line of defense. You have his attorney stating that this case never made sense. Very few murders, he says, take place before a crowd of witnesses, especially while officers are working with dispatchers and requesting an ambulance and emergency response, right, all at the same time. There's also quite a bit in this questioning the video evidence, how these so-called expert witnesses could actually even testify at all to the cause of death of George Floyd. The only person to ever conduct an autopsy on George Floyd was Dr. Andrew Baker. Instead, he's called fifth in line to testify. And he talks about how there's no asphyxiation at all that George Floyd suffered from. And in fact, you know, his findings are cardiopulmonary arrest, that George Floyd, in fact, died of a heart attack. And you now have 50 police officers, former and current Minneapolis police officers, that have come forward in this filing to say that Derek Chauvin was trained in the maximal restraint technique. They were all trained in MRT. And that is, in fact, what he was doing on May 25th, 2020. So you have a lot of these, you know, questionable people who've been called and testified, and many people have said that they actually committed perjury in Derek Chauvin's case. So all of that wrapped up into this 71-page filing last week to either vacate Chauvin's conviction or grant him a new trial.
All right, Liz, before I let you go, I just want to nail down on this point. We have these 50 officers, current and former, saying he was trained in this. Well, this is information that I know you had talked about back when it mattered, before Derek Chauvin went to prison. So, not insulting them or anyone else involved, because I don't know the details, where were these 50 guys back when Derek Chauvin was on trial?
Well, what's interesting is the judge did not allow MRT, the maximal restraint technique, to be discussed at trial at all. They said that Derek Chauvin didn't sign his name in the last time it was trained during MPD, but, you know, training. But I think it only adds to the spotlight on the judge in this case, Judge Peter Cahill, who has since retired. But there were many questionable rulings that he made. I've always said in the case, Jesse, it's more about what the jury was not allowed to see in Derek Chauvin's case rather than what they were.
Liz, happy Thanksgiving to you. I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.